You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 293 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Batman, Beyond the White Knight number 3, The Swamp Thing number 13, Batman Fortress number 1, Deathstroke Inc. number 9, Robin number 14, Action Comics 1043, Detective Comics 1060, The Flash season 8 episode 18, The Man in the Yellow Tie, and Superman and Lois season 2 episode 14, World's War Bazaar. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. The first trailer for Batman and Superman Battle of the Super Sons has appeared online, teasing the upcoming team-up between Damian Wayne and Jonathan Kent.
I was a little... I didn't know much about the film before the trailer, Drew, so I didn't know. I just assumed it was going to be the same animation style we've seen. But this was, for people that haven't seen the trailer for this, it was more of a computer animated, still like a hand, like animated in a hand-drawn style, but interesting. I'm curious if their films might be made like that going forward or not. I don't know. I would assume that's more expensive, right? But I don't know.
I have no clue if it's more expensive or not. I was surprised to see that Starro was going to be in it. And the other thing I thought was weird was Starro was coming out of people's mouth and popping on their face.
That was something that stuck out to me in that trailer too, Drew, because I've not seen Starro do that before. I'm not even complaining. I mean, I like it because it was like,
So interesting. To me, it looked like the whole world is under Starro's control, and only Superboy and Robin are the only ones not affected. So, looks like they're going to be trying.
The main characters of the film are the only people that stand in the way of the villain, Drew? That's unheard of.
Okay, but no, it looked pretty interesting. It looked like it was going to be fun, is what it looked like. So I'm kind of excited about this one.
Now it felt a lot like the comic.
Yeah, it sure did. And it didn't say if it was releasing in theaters or if it was going to be on HBO Max. I don't know where it was releasing to. I don't think it said.
I assume HBO Max, Drew. I'd be a little bit surprised if it came out in theaters, only because I don't think it would make a lot of money. It's one of those ones where I feel like we discussed this when we talked about Batgirl, where I don't think it's something that people would expect to make a lot of money, but like... You know, when it inevitably doesn't, do you risk that becoming the story? I think it would be like the money that Ghost of the Phantasm got when it was released in theaters isn't fantastic, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It's a great film. Most people really like it. I know both of us certainly like that film. But the box office was not where that movie was at, right? I can't imagine that it would be for this one either.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I am excited about seeing it, though. I love the Super Sun, so.
Yeah, I agree. The trailer got me excited, Drew. The animation style was a pleasant surprise, just because I don't feel like we've seen a lot. There's been a couple other of the, I feel like one of the Green Lantern ones, they tried to do some like 3D animation stuff, and it was weird, if I remember right. But this looked good. It helped them, I thought, replicate the art style of the Super Sons comic really well, and the tone fit the comic as well too. So definitely looking forward to checking it out.
Me too. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, the CW has released that Stargirl season 3 premiere date is Wednesday, August 31st at 8 p.m. And I gotta tell you, that really surprised me, Cletus, that it was premiering in August instead of October.
Yeah, I can't think of the last time something debuted in August in regards to the stuff that we review. I guess, I mean, besides maybe like HBO Max stuff, but those are sort of operating on their own timelines. So yeah, I was very surprised by the release date for this. And given the length of the seasons, Drew, I feel like it's going to be done probably by December, right?
I would think so. A question for you, because I can't remember. Was this one of those that was released on the CW and HBO Max?
No, it was, I mean, maybe, but it was originally, this was like one of the last DC Universe projects, remember? And they got it sort of like co-funded by the CW, and then when that essentially folded into HBO Max, I think it became just a CW thing, but it probably also gets onto HBO Max. I don't know. I honestly never checked to watch it that way.
I can't remember. I thought it was one of the shows that I watched from HBO Max. I may be wrong. I can't remember.
It would not shock me if it's on there because of the nature of its origin, where it was one of the last DC streaming service properties, but I don't know. I honestly have never checked, Drew, so I wouldn't be surprised. If any of the CW ones were on there, I think it would be that one. But I don't know.
Okay, I just couldn't remember if it was one of those where they were simultaneously releasing. Because I knew they... Maybe it was season one they did that? I can't remember now.
Season one they definitely did on the old streaming service. They definitely did that. Whether that's carried over to HBO Max or not, that I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. And something tells me if it is, it'd be delayed or something.
Well, and what was interesting, I don't know if you remember this, Drew, when we were reviewing the first season, was the streaming service version of the show was slightly different every episode, at least the first two. I don't remember if it continued to be that way. But there was always like an extra 5-ish minutes roughly, because I think I had watched it via CW and I think you had watched it via the streaming app, and you described a scene that I had not seen. And I was like, I know I watched this show.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Or it was one of the two. We watched different versions of it and I was confused. One of us was confused. Maybe it was me. Maybe I was the one that saw the longer version. I don't remember. Anyway, I don't remember if that changed. I feel like that changed after the first handful of episodes. I feel like it just became the same episode on both. But I do remember at least the pilot and I think one other episode. There was extra footage and like enough to be noteworthy where it was like, now there's some stuff there that's odd that they cut out. So I don't know. I assume that they stopped doing that, even if it is on HBO Max, but that would be interesting if they did, for whatever reason, continue to do that.
Well, I just got on HBO Max, and the first two seasons of Stargirl are definitely on there, so
I don't know if it comes out simultaneously, though.
Yeah, that they might have changed that when they got rid of the DC streaming service, so I could tell you I definitely watched it on the DC streaming service, because I wanted to watch it without commercials. I gotta tell you, I hate watching stuff on the CW app. I wish everything was on HBO Max.
Oh man, the CW app is so frustrating because they only show like three commercials, but like you still get a relatively standard commercial break, but you only ever see this like small rotation of 3 to 4 commercials, and like none of them are that bad, but after you've seen the same one like 6 times in the span of an hour, you're like, oh my god, please.
Yes, I agree with you there. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, Martha.
What?
Do you like nerd stuff?
I do.
And do you like adult beverages?
I super do.
Well, then you should join us with a drink.
With a drink?
With a drink. But first, let's talk nerdy.
Clink. On the ESO Network.
We'll see you
on Tuesday.
Maybe next Tuesday.
Maybe.
Winter is coming, prepare with a fine cigar and listen to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. We smoke cigars and talk about movies and all kind of nerdy things. Available at CigarNerdPodcast.com. Also on the ESO Network at ESONetwork.com.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman Beyond the White Knight number 3. Terry sneaks into Gotham Tech to steal a microchip to help him control the Batman Beyond suit. Harley reminds Bruce that Derek Powers was going to extend Bruce's sentence by forcing Harley to testify against him. Getting married was the only way Harley could protect him, spousal privilege. Bruce fixes up a low-tech suit he created before the Beyond suit and heads out without a partner against Harley's wishes. Derek Powers tells Dick Grayson not to worry about him, but to go after Bruce Wayne. Terry gets a call from Derek Powers, who tells Terry that Bruce Wayne hired the man who killed his father. Bruce reveals to Jack his history with Derek Powers. Derek's father was hired on to Wayne Cryotech by Victor Fries. Derek followed in his father's footsteps, and it all changed when Derek learned the truth about the Cryotech and its ties to the Nazi scientist Baron von Fries. Rather than him quit, Lucius Fox agreed to let Derek transfer to the automotive division. Derek wasn't just satisfied making vehicles. He wanted to make them for military, loaded with guns, bombs, and other weapons. Bruce wouldn't allow that and threatened to shut Powers down. Powers stated if Bruce shut him down, he'd reveal the truth that Bruce Wayne was Batman. The two made a deal and Powers turned Wayne Motors into Batman's research and development. It was a rocky relationship between the two. Bruce heads to the GCPD to access his files. Bruce is interrupted by Terry wanting answers. Bruce demands his suit back, but Terry wants to know why Bruce had Warren McGinnis killed. Bruce tells Terry he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Duke Thomas shows up in a Robin costume given to him by Barbara. Terry and Duke fight. Bruce is accidentally knocked off the building during the fighting and lands on a car. Barbara finds Bruce. To be continued.
Drew, I really enjoyed this issue, as I've enjoyed all of this White Knight universe stuff. Just, I love what he's created with this world. That being said, not a criticism of this issue, but a potential concern I have for this series is that it feels potentially like it could be paced a little too quickly. I feel like things are happening, like, simultaneously not a lot has happened, right? Like, Bruce is still just only freshly escaped from the prison, but it also feels like we're culminating towards a confrontation with the business guy fairly quickly too. You know, I don't know. It's like a weird combo of pacing that might not happen, to be clear. He might, you know, figure out a way to completely stick the landing, which he's done for the most part with this series. So they certainly want to give him the benefit of the doubt. But as I was reading this issue, I was like, I feel like we could potentially be moving a little too fast here.
It's possible. It depends on how many issues it is. If it's only 6 issues, we'd be halfway through it right now. But I really don't know how many issues it is. It might say on the cover of the issue.
I can't remember. I think most of these, I think, have been like 7 or 8, right? I think they've been up in 6, but they've not been like a 12 maxi series either.
Right, I'm going to check right now, because I'm curious. It doesn't say on the cover. You know how sometimes they say
one of six or whatever.
It doesn't say on the cover, so I don't know.
I imagine it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 8. Obviously, I could be wrong, but I think that's generally about what the other two have been. So, like I said, I had no problem with this issue itself. I just felt like potentially we could have a pacing problem with the rest of the series, but I'm certainly going to give it the benefit of the doubt because as a whole, this series has been so good.
One of the things I noticed in this issue was Derek told Terry that Bruce Wayne was the one that had his father killed. But we all know that's not Bruce Wayne's style. So that's a flat-out lie right there. If you know anything about Bruce Wayne, he's not going to have somebody killed.
Well, especially in a world where they know that Bruce is Batman. That seems like a particularly easy lie to disprove. I get where Powers is coming from, because he clearly is trying to eliminate the threat that Bruce represents and has clearly been able to manipulate Terry quite a bit, but that one seemed like a really obvious misstep on his part. And I'm sure it's meant to be, I'm sure it's meant to be a misstep, right? I'm sure this is meant to be the thing that loses his control over Terry, but it seemed like a somewhat obvious mistake for a guy that seems to have been fairly clever in his life leading up to this point.
Yes, it has. And, you know, Terry's kind of young and naive, so him kind of missing it at first makes sense. But it's not gonna take too long for him to figure out that, yeah, Bruce Wayne's not going to have anybody killed.
Yeah, and again, especially, like, you could potentially believe it if you just think that Bruce is a really rich dude, right? Like, yeah, well, maybe that seems a little out of character because I don't think he's ever done anything criminally, but okay, maybe. But in a world where you know that he's Batman, who famously doesn't kill people, like, yeah, that might raise a red flag or two.
Just might. That just stood out to me while I was reading this, so. Yeah, this is another really good issue, and I'm looking forward to more of it. I also noticed in this issue that they pointed out the reason of why Harley and Bruce got married was more of a convenience thing, but honestly, there still felt like there was romantic tones behind it, too.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Joker makes that pretty, or Jack, I guess, makes that pretty clear, right, that they both definitely have feelings for each other, and as well as the reader can pick up on that as well. I wasn't a huge fan of that, to be honest. Not the fact that they have feelings for each other, Drew, but it felt like he kind of had that twist at the end of the issue and then kind of quickly pulled the rug out from the reader. It was kind of like, it felt like a really old school TV show or, you know, some sort of ongoing story twist where they like tease some big development, but then just kidding, actually, it's the same status quo as it always is.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I wanted to see them try to be more romantic or something.
I felt like he was trying to back off a little bit. Like, it felt like he wanted to take the big risk and then was like, maybe small risk. And it's like, nah, man, just go, like, look at this world that you've built. Just go for it.
Yeah, it fits perfectly in this world. So just go for it.
Exactly. It felt like he was chickening out a little bit. And I was like, but you have no reason to, man. Like, especially not in the third book. You've won, like, as far as like from a creative standpoint, you've won. You've proven yourself in this story already. You can take risks.
Honestly, though, it gives more stakes to the fact that Bruce would be wanting to help find Harley's kids because, you know, he'd be their stepdad. Well, technically, he is their stepdad. So, that's another thing I'm interested in too, is seeing stuff play out more with the kids. We didn't see it too much in this issue, but I'm sure we're going to see it a lot more in the next issue.
Well, and that's sort of what I'm talking about with pacing wise, is that I feel like there's a lot of stuff here that you could really sink your teeth into story wise and really spend some time and develop, but that doesn't include, but you can't kind of do that with only what, at 5-ish issues left.
Yeah, I don't know how many issues are.
That's what I'm kind of talking about, where it feels like there's a lot of stuff. You got Duke putting on the Robin suit. Something to do with that. You've got the whole idea of Terry becoming Batman Beyond. That's really exciting, right? And I'm assuming that he would like to do a series of with Terry coming out after that. And again, like you said, you got Bruce and Harley and the kids. Like, there's a lot there. It's one of the best things that he's done, is how rich this world feels, but it's also, in this case, potentially a downside in regards to that's a lot to try to all examine and jam into what is probably not that many issues left.
Yeah, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's done some really good stuff so far, so.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Swamp Thing number 13. Levi is lying in bed with Jennifer Reese, snuggling. Levi gets up and stares out the window, and he becomes the Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing and Jack Hawksmoor are not in Detroit, but a machination of such monstrous proportions that it bends and warps all reality within the factory. In the absence of raw material, the factory has taken the lost and homeless that have ventured into its boundaries. Levi states this is a mistake because when a place is abandoned, it is retaken by plants, water, rot, and earth. Swamp Thing and Jack decide to try to starve the factory out. It fights back by creating an avatar to fight them. Swamp Thing and Jack work together to stop it. Swamp Thing knows this is just the beginning. Trinity comes out of the desert and makes a friend of Rodrigo. He shields her from the cold with his old coat. He offers her food, drink, and a place to sleep for the night. In the morning, Trinity finds Rodrigo unmoving and dead. His skin is covered with radiation sores. Distraught, Trinity carries Rodrigo into a nearby town where she hopes that they can remake his broken body. Instead, she is met with fear and violence. Trinity leaves Rodrigo there and walks out of town. Swamp Thing goes to talk to the trees. It tells Swamp Thing he has failed. A new parliament is rising, a parliament of gears, whose grinding machinations will crush all caught within. Jacob appears and calls Levi weak. Levi is stripped of his avatar title, and a parliament represented by a little girl tells Levi, "There will come a time when they realize their mistake. They will need you then." When Levi returns home to Jennifer, Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, is waiting for him. 8 hours ago, a vast armada has arrived at Earth. They are botanical in nature, and all attempts at communication have failed. Levi replies that they are here to fight a war. To be continued.
Drew, I was so pumped when Hal Jordan popped up at the end of this issue.
That I know was so
exciting for me.
It was a big surprise. I was not expecting him to show up.
We've had such, in my opinion, Drew, a brutal stretch of Green Lantern. It's such a breath of, and it doesn't even need to be Hal. He is my favorite, but like, it really could have been any of the Green Lanterns. And just to have them pop up doing like, you know, their basic function as a Green Lantern was just such a breath of fresh air. I got more excited than I should have been because it really wasn't even the main point of the plot point, right? Like the main thing was that presumably his brother is calling in extraterrestrial plant reinforcements, which is a bonkers plot point, and huge credit to the creative team for coming up with that. But I still felt the most excitement about the Green Lantern.
I know, it was really awesome. I'm also enjoying the story with Trinity because when we saw her last issue, I thought she was going to be some sort of villain, but she seems to be just a naive avatar. And I could not remember if Rodrigo had some sort of connection with what she was before or not. It kind of felt like it, but I didn't remember anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I like how they portrayed her in this. She's just kind of naive. You know, she didn't realize she's causing the problem with her radiation.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm really curious to see the payoff with that character and see the direction that it takes.
Now, that little girl, do you know what parliament she represented? I couldn't figure that out.
She was part of the Green. He was talking to the Parliament of Trees, and she was just like, I think, a young tree. That was my interpretation, Drew.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. Now, Jacob, what is he an avatar of? Is he the avatar of the trees? I was confused by that, too.
The implication of that scene, Drew, was that they stripped the title of Swamp Thing, basically, and gave it to the brother.
Oh, so Jacob is supposed to be the Swamp Thing now, but he didn't look anything like the Swamp
Thing.
Well,
not the Swamp, but like he's the new avatar of the Green. They essentially stripped the title from him and gave it to Jacob.
Okay.
Because he and obviously the Parliament believe that the only way to confront the threat is through war, right? And so they essentially take it from somebody they don't believe adequate to do the job that they believe is necessary, and so they give it to the brother.
Okay. That wasn't too clear to me when I was reading it, so I'm glad you clarified that.
It's possible I misinterpreted that, Drew, but I really don't think I did. I'm almost positive that he was essentially stripped of the Avatar power. So they're effectively not Swamp Thing, but clearly still has some power because of essentially a dissenting member of the Parliament.
Okay. I'm glad you cleared that up.
Again, that might not be right, but I feel pretty confident.
Either way, it was a really good story, so I'm looking forward to more of this title, that's for sure.
This whole run has been really good, and what I love is the world building that they do, and that Swamp Thing obviously has existed for a long time, and not everything that we're reading is new ideas necessarily, but a lot of the stuff that gets introduced for the most part has been fairly new, right? Like this idea of the Avatar of Industry, the entire new Swamp Thing character. I've been so impressed with how he has incorporated stuff we know about Swamp Thing and characters like Woodrow into it while still introducing what is honestly a lot of new stuff, and yet it still feels like the Swamp Thing that we know, and it still feels like it's not hard to understand what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, it's impressive how easily they've blended, old Swamp Thing stuff with the new stuff that he's wanting to tell. It's been very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. One last thing before we move on. We were reading another story recently about some island or something. Do you remember what that story was? Because I haven't seen anything pop up about it recently. I can't even remember what it was called. It had Constantine in it. He was out on an island or something. It had a little girl and her dad. Do you remember that story?
Not really.
I thought we only read an issue or two of it, and it kind of disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. Well, I'm going to have to do some look back and see what the heck that was. Because that was a good story, too, and it had to do with...
wasn't that an Aquaman?
Was that an Aquaman story?
I thought that was some... That was a different Swamp Thing book.
Yeah. It was a different book, but it was... I thought the story was pretty good, but it's... I haven't seen anything come out for the next issue or anything.
Maybe the Aquaman... There was definitely... Water was definitely involved. It made me feel like maybe Aquaman was involved, but maybe that's wrong.
Yeah, because there was only... Yes,
I remember the story you're talking about now. Yeah, I don't know what happened with that.
I don't know either. It hasn't popped back up or anything. I wonder if it went on hiatus or they canceled it. I don't know. I'm going to have to look back and try to find it and see what happened to it. This, reviewing this story made me think of that one. And I'm like, wait a minute. I haven't seen anything come out about it. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Fortress Number 1. There's a blackout in Gotham City. A group of men decide they are going to rob Wayne Manor since the security system is out and they heard Bruce Wayne was out of town. The criminals are surprised to be confronted by Bruce Wayne and Alfred. They lock the criminals in a safe room until the GCPD can come pick them up. In the Batcave, Bruce and Alfred learn that the blackout appears to be worldwide. Not all cities are without power yet, but they are falling by the hour. Only one of their satellites are working, and Bruce has the satellite search for unusual extraterrestrial activity. No sign of Superman, and Alfred will try to contact the Justice League while Batman heads out into Gotham City. On the rooftop of police headquarters, Commissioner Gordon has hooked up the bat signal to car batteries. Gordon tells Batman there's a massive breakout at Arkham because the electronic locks failed before the backup generators kicked in. Batman heads out into the city. Batman must prioritize. He bypasses looters in favor of stopping armed muggings and tracking down villains like the Penguin and the Joker. When Bruce returns to the Batcave, Alfred informs him that all cities are now blacked out. Alfred shows Batman an image of an unidentified aerial phenomenon over the Indian Ocean, picked up by their satellite. Alfred asks Batman if they are declaring war. Batman replies they declared war when they shut down our planet.
I really did not care for this, Drew. The art, you know me, weak to mediocre art can really dim a story for me, and the writing's got to be phenomenal to make up for it, and the writing just for me personally did not make up for it. I thought this was an average story at best, and with some really conflicting tone, I thought, because he clearly is trying to do like your typical Batman's such a badass, he can save the world single-handedly, which fine. You know I'm down to read a story like that, Drew. That's fine. But then he's also doing, like, the version of the Joker that's kind of a joke, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that wasn't the more modern version of the Joker that we've seen that is a lot more of an existential threat. This was sort of like the golden, that's not cool, a Silver Age, easily jailed prankster. You know what I mean? Like, I thought the tone was a little bit mixed on this, and I just, it didn't really land with me.
I liked the story. I thought the Joker Penguin stuff was kind of a sidetrack to the actual story, though. And I didn't care for Penguin, the version they used of Penguin in this. You talked about the Joker. I didn't like how they portrayed Penguin. But
obviously. Your point is pretty good there, Drew, where it was a kind of an unnecessary diversion. I thought that was what the story was going to be, that the blackout happened and now Batman was going to need to figure out how to get all the guys back in Arkham. I was like, okay, I mean, we've seen that story, but sure, it could be good. And then it kind of wasn't really about that at all. It's about whatever this potentially alien threat. I felt like there was some foreshadowing that it might be related to Superman, which could be an interesting enough twist that it could get me intrigued again, Drew. It's like, the door is open for me. But what I got in this issue for me, I was kind of like, eh.
So I'm curious to see where it's going to go before I make up my mind about it. I think I liked the story a little more than you did. I thought the Gotham City stuff, like I said, was, it kind of took away from the story of what's going on. It's kind of, you know, it was a kind of a distraction, but I'm interested in, because I had the feeling that they call this Batman Fortress. I don't know why they called it that. I thought maybe he was going to be stuck in the Batcave trying to figure things out. But it sounds like they gathered the rest of the Justice League. Of course, they haven't said what members are going to be in it. So maybe Batman's leading the Justice League to stop whatever this is. It's going to take next issue for me to decide, you know, if I like this or not. So.
Yeah, no, and I think that's totally fair because I don't feel like we've gotten the full pitch of what this story is, which is weird. That's weird to me, Drew, because, I mean, unless you're banking on people reading the trade of this, which I don't know if you can do that or not, I feel like you got to do a little bit more to hook the reader in with this because I agree with you. I kind of want to know what this threat actually is. Is the Justice League actually going to be involved? It felt to me like they were trying to hint that potentially Superman might in some way be a part of the threat. And like all of that is intriguing to me to see what exactly it is they're going to do. And it's odd to me that they wouldn't do any of that in the first issue.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Deathstroke Inc. number 9. Slade takes Respawn to a criminal doctor, but there is nothing he can do for him. Batman and Robin are dealing with the fake Deathstroke, but he gets away by causing some sort of cave-in. Deathstroke returns to the secret society. Deathstroke and Ghostmaker fight. When Deathstroke threatens to kill Clown Hunter, Ghostmaker puts down his weapons. Deathstroke escapes with the secret society. Talia tells Mother Soul that her son is dead. Mother Soul states that the prophecy is coming to pass. The true demon will return. Nezha will rise. The secret society steals a bat plane and arrives at Talia's place. To be continued.
I think it's worth also doing the next issue because they kind of just lead into each other.
Sure thing. All right, our next issue is Robin number 14. Batman and Robin return to where Ghostmaker was protecting the secret society, but learn Deathstroke has left. Deathstroke orders the secret society to slaughter everyone they see. Deathstroke and Talia fight each other, and Deathstroke gets the upper hand, claiming he's going to torture her, kill Batman and Damian in front of her. Talia stabs Slade in the chest first. Batman, Robin, Ghostmaker, and Batman Inc. arrive in a batplane over Talia's place. Ghostmaker takes on Angel Breaker while Batman and Robin look for Deathstroke and Talia. Robin comes across Ravager and discovers Respawn is dead. When Damian finds his mother, she has just killed Deathstroke. The fake Deathstroke shows up and reveals that he's the Prince of Markovia, Geoforce.
I was a little bit surprised, pleasantly surprised, Drew, that it seems like maybe Respawn's actually dead. I don't fully buy it yet. I'm still kind of hoping that that sticks, because I think both of us feel pretty strongly that we don't like that character.
Definitely don't like that character. And I know you made a point that you thought maybe he was going to be dead in this next issue, and you were correct. So, at least for now.
Yeah.
Deathstroke staying dead? No.
No. Right, yeah. And honestly, Drew, that makes me feel like it's more likely that neither of them die, unfortunately.
You're probably right about that, unfortunately.
I really don't want to see Respawn, literally ever again. Drew, we don't need a Damian clone. That's like the Peter Parker clones. Marvel got rid of those for a reason, too.
Did they? I thought I saw recently Ben Reilly was back.
Sort of. Yeah, with this whole Spider-Verse thing, and that was a while ago. Yeah, but...
I'm not even paying attention to Marvel. I saw that. I'm like, really? They're bringing back Ben Reilly?
But it made sense. In that case, it made sense to you, because they were bringing back, all the Spiders.
Okay, I don't know, because I don't know what's going on. I just saw Ben Reilly was back.
They might have been doing something with him recently. Spider-Verse was several years ago now.
Oh, it was something recent, because I saw the costume. I was like, ooh, Ben Reilly. Because I always liked that costume.
They brought the clones back during that. I know we're getting off topic, but they initially brought them back when they were doing Spider-Verse. But that completely made sense, because they were doing every Spider-Man ever. And it was of course you bring Ben Reilly for that, because why wouldn't you? And they kind of made it work, so I don't know, but my point still stands. I don't want a Deathstroke version of Damian and Damian out there. Come on, man, that's just getting a little, in my opinion, you're getting a little too comic book silly, in my opinion.
I'll consider the writer on this book, or no. These books.
Yeah, well, but this is my concern, Drew, is it fits for what Williamson's MO is. He always does this kind of over-the-top silliness. But somebody else has to write these stories after him. This is where I want to keep emphasizing this point. I kind of don't really care what Williamson does for his own stories. My bigger issue with him, and I've leveled this criticism against Bendis before too, is that they also affect other writers currently and in the future, also now have to deal with the mess that they made. It's one thing to tell your own mess. It's another thing to make a mess for other people, too.
That is true. I noticed in the Deathstroke issue that Mother Soul brought up that the demon's name is Nezha. And we've been seeing that in another title written by somebody else.
Is it the same one as in World's Finest? I don't think they're quite the same name, though.
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it was the same name.
I thought that they were similar, Drew. I didn't think it was the same name, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't care enough to check.
I just remember trying to say that before in one of our previous podcasts. That's why I recognized it, and that's why I put it in my notes. I thought that was interesting. It was the same demon, and it's two different writers. I didn't know if they were trying to do kind of spread something across the DC universe,
Maybe they are. The name rung a bell for me too, Drew, and I immediately thought of World's Finest. And I was like, no, that can't be right. And then I was like, I don't really care. So I just moved on and kept reading.
I was just surprised it popped up in this.
Yeah.
So.
We'll see. All I know for sure, Drew, is that this story is going to end completely ridiculously. I mean, even just the reveal of the fake Deathstroke being Geo-Force, I was like, what are we doing?
I've seen Geo-Force before, but I actually don't know what his powers are.
He's similar to Terra.
Oh, okay.
That's why there's an earthquake starting at the end of the issue.
I guess that makes sense. Wasn't that the country that Leviathan took over?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so he's holding a grudge against Talia, but it wasn't actually Talia who was the Leviathan leader at the time.
Right, but yeah, exactly. Again, I just... the only thing I can say for certain about this story is that I'm going to think the ending is stupid. That's... I would love to be... I can't even begin to describe how happy I would be to be wrong.
You'll be even happier when it's over.
Well, that I can guarantee I will be thrilled when it's over.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Action Comics 1043. Superman leads the rebellion to take the Citadel, and the teacher orders Orphan to tear them apart. Superman stops the robotic monster the child is trapped in. Manchester Black is also freed. Mongol has his people destroying the necropolis because it changes shape and makes it impossible to map or find the rebels' camp. Mongol thinks it's better to demolish it and look for Genesis fragments in the process. Mongol has Warworld go to the planet Thine. Mongol contacts a being named Tharos, who he made a deal with to keep the United Planets from interfering with when Superman challenged Mongol. Mongol is unhappy that the United Planets have designed ships that can defeat his Warworld battleship. Mongol states that he is taking Thine as slaves to feed his great worms and will accept 10,000 of the new United Planet ships for his own use. Mongol assures this will ensure the peace with the United Planets. Superman learns that Apollo has been moved to the Starforge, and Enchantis is a captive of a cosmic vampire capable of consuming planets when she's angry. Byla walks with Superman and tells him what he has learned of the old writing, stories he calls source myths. Byla tells Superman of an old god who went mad and killed his daughter. The other gods rose up and destroyed him, putting fragments of his essence in seven objects spread across the multiverse. From each of these seven fragments, a world grew. One of those worlds would eventually become Warworld. Mongol is looking for that fragment. Byla wants Superman to find it first. I have this funny feeling that fragment that he's talking about in the story is going to be what renews Superman's powers.
That's a really good point, Drew. I hadn't really thought of that, but yeah.
We know the Genesis fragments have been kind of restoring some of his power, but he still looks like that old Superman. Yeah. And I have a feeling that fragment, because we hadn't heard about this fragment before. This is kind of new. Mongol's looking for it because he wants power. But I'm guessing if Superman finds it first, it'll probably restore his powers back to normal. And that's how we're going to get Superman back. That's just a guess, though.
No, I think that's a really good guess, though, Drew. I like that idea a lot. It's interesting, Drew, because it definitely feels rightly so that we're coming to a head with a conflict between Superman and Mongol. And yet it feels like there's so much more that they still want to do and explore with Warworld, with this idea of feeding the great worms and the treasure at the center of the planet. Like, all that, that's just like fascinating sci-fi stuff, right? And it's just like, wow, you guys can keep going with this. I don't want necessarily this Civil War conflict to continue out, but like, it feels like they really have got some interesting stuff to do with this world still.
Yes, and even the backup story, we got the myth of Mongol. You know, Byla tells the story of how the first Mongol came to be. The Warzone hunting party saw something fall from the sky, a big flash of light, and a Warzone named Goldigo went to check on it and discovered Necropolis and a strange godlike warrior. And Gudago, or whatever his name was, attacked and killed the being and took his powerful armor and jewel. Thus, the first Mongol was born. And it looks like we're going to be getting more of this story in next month's Action Comics. So, they're really going in-depth with the Warworld history and myth and stuff. It's really interesting. And I got to say, I really love how the art style fits with this story, too.
Agreed. I totally agree. Yeah, it should. Again, we talk about other comics with this. The world building that they've done in the Action Comics book has been very impressive. Now, and I don't know, to be fair, Drew, I don't know a ton about Warworld, so I don't know how much of this is pre-existing story that they're building on. But regardless, whether it is or isn't, what they're doing has been great. I'm really enjoying it.
From what I know of Warworld from past stories, it was just the world that Mongol used to fly around and battle people. So all this rich stuff we're getting in this story is new to me. So
it's new to me too. Like I said, I always want to put the caveat that might potentially be new to me due to ignorance, and not because it's actually new.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Detective Comics 1060. Bruce Wayne is on a date with Judge Caroline Donovan. Bruce tries to get some information from her on the case he's working on, but she does not want to talk about work. Caroline is surprised that Bruce is being a true gentleman when he takes her home. Bruce is working on putting the pieces together in the garage when he gets a call from Batwoman. Deb Donovan has sent her an SOS about a break-in at the Gotham Gazette. Batman finds Deb and learns that she is researching the citizen criminals. Batman learns that John Harper was involved in an accident that led to the death of a 5-year-old boy when he was just 15, and he never got pinned for it because the lawyers dug up info and got the parents put away for neglect instead. Oracle contacts Batman and lets him know that Deb Donovan took out a massive loan from the Gotham Bank during her most recent divorce. It's the same branch that John Harper gassed. Martin Ashen is the DA's brother, the same DA who is almost always assigned to Caroline, and Caroline almost always rules in favor of. Batman matches the hair fibers he found at the Gotham Gazette break-in to Darby Turner. Batman goes to see Talia, asking when was the last time she saw Darby Turner. Talia changes into something more comfortable, and Talia tells Batman to pay attention to the Riddler's next message. Deb Donovan meets with Ms. Smith, who has information about the citizen criminals. Batman gets an alert about a hostage situation at the Gotham Gazette. Ms. Smith has Deb Donovan as a hostage. Ms. Smith is demanding to have every judge, cop, and lawman in Gotham to have their secrets aired to the world. Batman shows up, and Ms. Smith asks, when is a murderer not a murderer? Batman throws his batarang and knocks the gun from her hand. Some guy comes running up and says, no, Darby, to Mrs. Smith. Darby jumps from the building, and Batman dives to save her. Darby's friend is about to tell Batman about some envelopes and blackmail when Caroline comes up from behind him and shoots him. Cletus, what the heck is going on? There is a lot of stuff going on in here, and I was having problems keeping track of everything, but it feels like somebody is blackmailing these people. I thought it was some kind of mind control, but...
I think it's the Riddler. I think the Riddler's basically... This feels extremely inspired by
the movie?
Batman, the movie, or the Riddler, which was where he was doing the same thing, where he was essentially blackmailing / violently coercing people into doing what he needed, like the Attorney General scene. This felt like essentially a version of that, where he's got dirt on all these people, and so he keeps giving them instructions on what to do, otherwise he'll put that dirt out in the wild.
I'm pretty sure that when is a murderer not a murderer was in the movie.
I think so too. I'm almost positive it was with the Attorney General. I don't think this story's been that well executed. I don't think it's terrible, but I mean, if you're going to play heavy off of what I think we both consider to be a pretty good movie, I feel like you got to do a pretty good version yourself, because otherwise it's just going to kind of be an obvious lesser version of the same story, and that's kind of what it feels like right now.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. The other thing that felt weird in this was Talia. What is DC trying to do now? Are we trying to make Batman and Talia a thing again? I mean, Batman goes to visit her and she's putting on lingerie or something. I'm like, what are we doing?
I will agree that scene was wildly unnecessary, Drew. I don't think, however, that was DC trying to rekindle anything between them. I felt like that was them being like, well, it's Talia, and obviously, if you have Talia in a scene, she has to try to re-seduce Batman. That sort of, it felt like lazy characterization to me is what it felt like.
I agree with you on that. There was no reason for that. I think we're past that now. I don't know why we're trying to bring that back. We also had the Gotham Girl backup. Claire calls the police and gets interrogated about Andre's death until Chase Meridian shows up and saves her from the questioning. Claire returns to Wayne Manor with Andre's computer trying to figure out who killed him. Paul Perlman's men show up and try to capture her. Claire uses her powers to convince him to help her unlock the laptop. Claire bursts into Dr. Meridian's office and states, "You really thought you'd get away with killing somebody?" and flies out the window, crashing through it with her. First thing I want to say is, that whole Wayne Manor scene where the guys are coming in to get her, and then all of a sudden they're helping her like they're buddy-buddy, was just weird.
I agreed.
And then, I don't know what's going on with Dr. Meridian. This is the second time we've seen where they're trying to make her seem like she's antagonist. And that's not the vibe we got introduced to her at first. I don't know. It just feels weird.
Agreed again, Drew. I have nothing really to add because my takeaway at the end of this backup story was, what are we doing?
I know the first part of the story was, I thought it was pretty good, but this is kind of going off the rails here. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our DC television shows.
Comic-Cons are back, and fans are ready. Hear all about it on The Con Guy Show, where we keep you up to date on all the events, the movies, the people, and the conventions that drive your passions and feed your fandom. Straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California, we are proud members of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life. We talk to women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors. We also talk about conspiracy theories, The Muppets, our top three films of the decades, famous people we confuse with each other, and our favourite stand-up comedians. We have recast Star Trek The Original Series and Babylon 5, and created our alternative superheroes. But most of all, we have had so much fun doing it every 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Cosmic Pizza Podcast is not about the cosmos or about pizza.
All right, let's talk The Flash, Season 8, Episode 18, The Man in the Yellow Tie. Dr. Mina Dawin is the fastest woman alive for 3 minutes and 52 seconds. She is dressed in all black with a hood and has a black and white lightning. She is training with Flash. Mina accidentally hits Flash with a bolt of lightning, frustrated that she can't catch up. The artificial speed and organic speed weirdly mixed together on Flash's hand. Cecile is making a deposit at the bank when she gets robbed. A new ability unlocks for Cecile, and she is able to take out the robbers with the wave of her hand. Barry goes to Fast Track Labs to check out Mina's machine she's using to create the artificial speed force. Barry meets Mina's partner, the original Eobard Thawne, not just the Wells Thawne. He's the chief of engineering. Barry learns that Eobard suffers from a rare form of retrograde amnesia. Eobard states that he has trouble accessing memories connected to his personal life. Anything over a year ago, all he gets are occasional flashes. Barry goes back to Wells Thawne on Lian Yu, demanding answers. Thawne tells Barry he doesn't care. Barry shows Thawne a sketch of the machine. It's Thawne's machine he built 2 centuries from now. Mina is tapping into the negative speed force. Barry realizes if she continues to use the machine, the negative speed force will start to alter her personality. After Barry leaves, Wells Thawne calls John Diggle from his hiding spot. Diggle brings Wells Thawne the cube that fell out of the sky. Diggle has spent the last 2 years trying to find someone who can help him open it. Diggle believes that Wells Thawne can. Thawne makes a deal with Diggle. Once he helps open it, Thawne gets to see what's inside. Flash goes to Fast Track Labs to stop Mina from absorbing more negative speed force. But it's too late. Flash and Eobard get knocked back by her power. Wells Thawne helps Diggle open the cube. John sees 1,000 different lives he could lead. But John tells the cube no and it disappears. Diggle goes home. The original Thawne tells Flash that originally he wanted to be a speedster and save the world. But things changed when he fell in love with Mina. Only one person could use the machine. When Mina went into cardiac arrest because of her heart condition, Thawne put her in the machine to save her. Mina needs more electricity to stabilize the negative speed force. Flash works with Thawne to drain the negative speed force, but Mina is able to call lightning down directly from the negative speed force, stopping Barry. When Mina goes to kill Flash with a vibrating hand, Eobard steps in and talks Mina down. Eobard's love for Mina brings her back. Chester gets a message from Ray Palmer explaining that Flashpoint Thawne wasn't killed by the Black Flash, but has been protecting the timeline. Flashpoint Thawne has died. Cecile uses her power to stop a mugging. A mysterious woman seems to be watching. Caitlin calls Mark and he's in her messed up apartment. Mark has figured out how to bring back Frost. Wells Thawne is lying in his cell when Dion shows up. Dion states the light from the cube helped him find Thawne. It is time for Thawne to fulfill his destiny.
Oh, Drew. Needless to say, I did not like this episode. There are a lot of different things that I didn't like that this show did. I will say, we definitely need to catch up on Legends, apparently, because they felt like there were scenes from the most recent, the last season. I didn't feel like the show just made those up. I could be wrong. So I think that would have helped give us a little more context for this version of Eobard, because it kind of came out of nowhere for me. But I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt there. So if it's just building on what Legends did, fine. I don't love the idea of redeeming Eobard, because I feel like both in the comics and in this show, they frequently portray him something similar to the devil, like an irredeemably evil person, right? And so it felt weird, but I was like, okay, fine. If they weren't the show that initially did it and they're just continuing what they did, I can let that go. So I'm not going to complain about that. I will, however, Drew, absolutely die on this hill. This show is absolutely gaslighting its entire damn fan base by looking us straight in the eye and telling us, how dare you want anything else for Diggle other than for him to be a family man? Are you effing kidding me, Drew? They're the ones that introduced the idea of him being a Green Lantern. They're the ones that did the, John Diggle Stewart? And then they give the green glowing box and they keep teasing that maybe he'll be this. And then they look you in the eye and be like, if you think that he should be a cosmic hero and not a family man, then you're no better than Reverse Flash, you monster.
Well said.
What?
Well said, Cletus.
Gave us the idea. You can't. Oh, my God.
I thought that was so stupid. It was such a disappointment.
Well, not only was it's disappointing that I'm sure part of it is they probably don't have full permission. Probably. They certainly don't have the budget to do it. I get all of that. But don't spin it in a way where you spin it back on the viewer. Because he clearly was talking to the viewer there, really, right? Being like, I could have been a cosmic hero, but that's not who I am. Who I am is a family man. And it's like, sure, yes, that is true. I don't disagree with that necessarily, Drew. But again, the show is the one that introduced that idea. It wasn't us out of nowhere just making this crap up. The shows did this. CW as a whole did this. And then look us in the eyes and go, and you're dumb for thinking otherwise.
This is them in their slow death coming.
Yeah, that's a death rattle if I've ever seen one. Oh my gosh, Drew. I was enraged. I never thought that we would ever actually see him put on the ring in the first place. So it's a bummer that he didn't, but like, it wasn't like I was expecting otherwise, Drew. So I want to be clear that my anger isn't that he's not Green Lantern. It's that the show had the freaking gall to tell the viewers that of course he wouldn't be Green Lantern because that's never who he was. And you're dumb for thinking that he would be. You guys were the ones doing this. Don't put all of those other scenes in if you then want to turn around and be like, nah, he's a family man. If that's what you want him to be, then don't do any of that. Just keep him as the family man he already was.
Yes. If they weren't gonna do anything with it, why do it in the first place?
Drew, I can't. There are some other shows that I've had issues with finales or plot points like this where I feel like they are extremely insulting to the viewer,
in terms of their waste of time invested in intelligence, but I don't think I've ever been so angry as with this one, where I was just like, are you kidding me? I couldn't believe the gall of the show to do that. I was like, what are you talking about right now? They just didn't need the thing. I know I keep harping on this, but this is my last thing I want to say. They didn't even need to do the scene, Drew. I think everybody with any sense of rationale or reasonable expectations assumed that we would never see Diggle as Green Lantern, right? I think most of us didn't think that was going to happen. So then you just never do the scene, right? Just never do it. Just drop it. Honestly, it wouldn't be the only thing that they've just completely inexplicably dropped as a plot point, right? So like, just don't do the scene at all. I just didn't understand. I was like, what? Why would you do that? Was like the most insulting way possible to resolve that plot.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to bring up was Eobard, the original. It was nice to see the original back on here, but I wasn't happy about... They had to do the Eobard version of His Love Saves Mina.
Like I said, I really didn't care for that plot at all, but I'm willing to give the show a little bit of a break because I do think they're building off of whatever they did with that character on this past seasons of Legend. Again, we haven't seen it yet, so I don't know if that's true, but it definitely seemed, the impression I got from the Ray Palmer scene was that they're not just making that plot point up, that came from this other show. So in that case, I can give them a little bit of a break. I didn't like it, to be clear, but I'm not going to heavily criticize them because it doesn't seem like it was originally their idea.
Yeah, I do feel like you do. They are building off something from Legends, and we have yet to review that.
Yeah. To be clear, I did not care for this weird, oh, she's my lightning rod. I hate that plot point to begin with, and they just, the absolutely recycled line of, and I was stunned going off of recycled lines tangent real quick. When Cecile has her powers just like go exponentially more powerful and they're examining her in the lab afterwards, I couldn't believe they didn't say that she leveled up. I could feel the words forming in the character's mouth and they didn't say it. I was like, oh my God. My God, they didn't say it for once. But then they threw Lightning Rod in there, so I was like, oh, okay. All right, we're still recycling lines.
All right, anything else you want to say about Flash before we move on?
I just, Drew, it bums me out, man. It really does. I wish the show was better, and I know it will likely never again reach what we saw in its early days, but, like, good God, man, it has just not been good.
Nope, it hasn't. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week, Superman and Lois, Season 2, Episode 14, World's War Bazaar. Superman wakes up from his coma. Allie has drained Superman's cells of all solar energy. Clark realizes something is wrong when he returns home and the sun does not seem to be powering him up. John Henry and Clark go to see his Kryptonian mother at the desert fortress. Laura tells Clark that his cells have been severely damaged, altered by Allie's absorption power. Until he heals, Clark won't have his powers. The world can see the red square sun in the sky as Allie begins to merge it with our world. People seem to be on the verge of panic. Chrissy and Lois meet with Mayor Lana and give her the truth. Jordan and John are talking on the porch, watching their dad as he sits in the sun trying to recharge. Bizarro Lana shows up. She attacks Jordan first until Clark tells her to take him. When she turns to use her cold vision, John Henry and Natalie show up in their suits. Bizarro Lana leaves. Mayor Lang holds a town hall and gives the people of Smallville the truth. The former mayor gets everyone riled up until Superman shows up to tell them that Lana is telling the truth. Lana tells the townspeople to go home and stay close to their families and beware of any doppelgangers. John Henry locks out Natalie's suit for 10 minutes while he goes through the portal to stop Allie. John Henry wants Natalie to stay behind to protect Clark and his family. John Henry makes it into the void between worlds. He spots Allie and tells Natalie that they don't have much time. John Henry shoots her with a missile, but Allie absorbs the energy and shoots it back at John Henry. Jordan is talking in the hallway with Sarah after the town hall. Lana shows up and tells Sarah to come along. Bizarro Lana shows up and Jordan tells both Sarah and Lana to run. Bizarro John shows up and attacks Superman. Jordan hears it with his super hearing and heads to the gym while fighting Lana. When Bizarro Lana tries to blast Jordan with her freeze eyes, Jordan turns her head towards Bizarro John and he gets blasted. Jordan throws Bizarro Lana into the wall and Bizarro John tries to cold blast Jordan, but Jordan defends himself using his heat vision. Bizarro Lana and John. Natalie shows up after her suit unlocks to even out the fight. Using John Henry's hammer, Natalie and Jordan beat the Bizarros. The Kents return home to find Natalie crying because she believes she is never going to see her dad again. Lois tells Natalie she can stay with them for as long as she wants. Sarah is upset because she realizes Lana knew the truth about Jordan having powers. As they are trying to have a conversation, the worlds begin to merge. Items from the Bizarro world are starting to appear on Earth. Allie smiles at her seeming success as she continues to merge the worlds.
Drew, I have basically the same commentary for this episode that I have for the last one, that I continue to like the interpersonal relationship development between the way that they deal with these characters and how they interact with each other. I continue to really like a lot of that because the writing is notably better and they act much more human, I personally feel, in both their dialogue and their actions. All that being said, I still think this plot's really silly, and that did not change this episode.
You could say it's bizarre.
But I wouldn't, though, Drew. That's the thing that I think I've beaten this horse so dead, but, this isn't bizarro, and it's just so frustrating to me that this is this didn't need to be bizarro. This story could be the exact same story and just be an alternate dimension. The fact that they're doing it bizarro, so you've got the silly things like the square sun and the square earth and stuff like them talking backwards, but then doing it all super seriously, is they're not compatible, Drew.
Now, if you take the bizarro stuff out of this and we just did a straight dimensional thing where they're trying to merge the dimensions or whatever, would you like the story better?
Yes. Honestly, yes. I think it would be less inherently silly. I think one of the problems with the plot is that the inherent silliness of bizarro stuff is baked into what they're doing. And so you've got stuff like they're looking menacingly up at the sky, but ominously, but it's a freaking square sun, Drew. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. If it was a red sun trying to merge with a yellow sun, not square, but looking like a regular sun, we wouldn't think anything of it.
No, nothing. I know it's a silly little thing, but I really do think it makes a difference. Yes, it probably makes a bigger difference to me than most people, but I do still think if this was just a straight up alternate dimension world, which I don't think would affect the plot points at all, it would just make everything a little less silly and would fit. They clearly want to do this story seriously, which is fine. That fits the tone of the show better, frankly, than Bizarro does in the first place. And it clearly fits what they're trying to do better. That's fine, Drew. I have no problem with them trying to do a serious alternate Earth threat story. That is fine with me. But it can't be Bizarro World. It just can't. It could be Earth 2. It can be Earth 9220. But it can't be Bizarro World and be serious.
Now, I had a question for you. Do you think we're done with John Henry? Or do you think he's going to come back?
He may not come back this season. But I would be shocked if he's gone permanently.
I was curious about that. I'm like, I wonder, because they set it up to have John Henry off the show if they needed to, because honestly, Natalie can take his place, and we'd have Natalie living with the Kents. She knows their secrets. She can do everything John Henry can do, honestly, I was kind of curious if they were just going to replace him with Natalie and take him off the show.
I think he was too abrupt, though, Drew. I know they had the kind of stereotypical "I'll just be gone for a minute" goodbye thing, but then his apparent demise was so sudden and not dwelt on at all. I could see this being a benching, so to speak, in terms of like sitting him out potentially for the rest of the season. Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe for like an episode, or maybe like a little bit into next season. I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me if he just isn't around for a bit, but I would be very surprised if that was actually the last time we saw him.
Okay. I was just curious, because they kind of set it up that they could do that. So
I agree with you, Drew. I just feel like, given off of what tropes of television that we know, that feels unlikely.
I was finally happy that Sarah found out about Jordan's powers.
Yeah, thank God. That was going to be frustrating if we were going to continue that charade for, I don't know, another season or so. That'd have been frustrating.
Yeah.
That being said, I will say I was very pleasantly surprised at the town hall meeting, Drew. I thought for sure that he was about to reveal that he was Clark Kent. And I was like, oh, God, how is that going to possibly help the situation? You know what I mean? I felt like it was going to be one of those classic CW things where they, like, do something that has no logical way of helping, and the show's like, and it helped. But
yeah.
But they didn't do that. And I was very pleasantly, I was like, well done. Okay. Like I said, I feel like this show, the overall actual plot, I really do think is a little bit noticeably more silly than last season. But I still continue to think that the way that the show represents the way people talk, I really cannot emphasize that enough, that it actually feels like real conversation and not canned lines. Supergirl. But also just like the way that they interact, too, also feels like real relationships and not just like canned drama. Flash. So I want to give the show a lot of credit for that. I have, like I said, I have some criticisms in regards to what they're doing overall with the plot, but it is still very noticeably, obviously better than what the other CW shows are doing or had done recently. The only other thing I wanted to mention real quick, Drew, and I think I mentioned this potentially last episode too, I definitely will admit, I very much could be wrong about this, but I keep getting the feeling that the two Johns might merge and this might be how we get a powered John.
Yeah, I've been having that feeling, too, that the Johns were going to merge. And I don't know how I feel about that. What is he... It may give him powers, but is it going to turn him into a villain? I don't know.
I don't know necessarily. I feel like they're going to have their cake and eat it, too, in somewhat typical CW fashion, where, like, the bad thing happens, but it's a purely good outcome, where you get, like, the powers of bad John, but the personality and morals of good John. That seems like the most likely outcome to me, Drew.
You're probably right on that. So, but we'll have to wait and see if that's what they actually do.
And again, they may not do it at all. I don't want to necessarily say that this is likely. I do think it's likely that before this show is over, that John ends up superpowered. And this feels like potentially a path to do that.
Yeah, it sure does. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, I just went and saw Thor Love and Thunder today. Saw the Black Adam trailer in theaters, which was really cool. Continue to be really excited to check that movie out. But Thor was really funny. It was super, super funny, Drew. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to check it out yet, but I'm assuming many of our viewers have seen the last one, Ragnarok, which was quite funny itself. This one was very funny. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, my kids went and saw it today, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet. So tomorrow or during this week, I'm going to go see it. So I'm excited about seeing it too.
And we have ex-Batman Christian Bale plays the villain Gore the God Butcher in it, and he is phenomenal. Unsurprising. I can't think of a time that Christian Bale's not great in a role, but obviously he's great in this too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about DC notifications and ringtones I've stuck on my phone. Now, when Cletus texts me now, my phone goes, Shazam!
That's awesome.
When my wife texts me now, it comes up with a Wonder Woman notification. And when she calls me, my phone rings the Wonder Woman theme from the newer Wonder Woman movies. I'm having a blast with this stuff. Because before, I've always had boring stuff. But my new phone, my brother showed me how to set it up so I could have different notification rings and tones and stuff for different people. It's pretty cool. And of course, I set my stuff to DC stuff. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we have Action Comics 2022 Annual, the Batman 2022 Annual, Shadow War Omega, which I hope closes out that storyline, Justice League Road to Dark Crisis, and DC Pride 2022, along with our DC television shows The Flash and the season finale of Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Waiting for you and the power you possess in your satin tights, fighting for your rights and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.